And now, Chuck and Winkler, live from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studio.
Listen up, people!
On Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studios. That's Chuck Freeman. I'm Bart Winkler. The whole state stopped on Wednesday as TV stations and radio stations brought you what was happening inside the walls at 1265, where Matt LaFleur was eventually, after some filibustering from Mark Murphy, eventually introduced as the team's 15th head coach. And in that room was our Michael Cohen. He writes for The Athletic. He joins us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Good morning, Michael.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Did Mark Murphy make it clear to you that this was his hire yesterday? If there's was ever a doubt, I don't know if there ever was, but that Murphy was, this was going to be his hire.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Murphy made that pretty clear, I thought, 5 weeks ago, you know, when he said that he would be the one making the decision. And I think that that certainly is true through the interview process. And, you know, the Packers made it clear that, Gutekunst and Russ Ball, the two guys that were on the road with him as well, interviewing candidates, they made sure to make it clear that all three of those guys agreed on LaFleur as the best choice. But there was no doubt that Murphy was leading the way, and this was his decision. And the success or failure of LaFleur will go a long way toward indicating Murphy's job security down the road as well.
I believe my theory here, Michael, and this could just be because Gutekunst is a fellow UW lacrosse alum like myself, and I think very highly of other alum. I think Gutekunst is more in charge than we are seeing. My theory would be that this is Gutekunst's guy, because when I watched those two yesterday, I get a vibe very similar to an experience that I had, and it was just a radio job. You know, this is football, completely different worlds. But I had a boss who wanted to be in control, and so I let him think that he was in control, and basically every decision that he made was kind of my decision. Would you give any credence to my theory that Gutekunst was the one that, like LaFleur, got Murphy to be convinced that it was his decision, and now if LaFleur doesn't work out, it's going to be Murphy, because he was up there saying, pounding his chest, this is my guy, that it's going to be Murphy who has to be accountable for it?
Well, I don't think there's any question that Gutekunst likes LaFleur, but I'm a firm believer that this was Murphy's deal. I mean, I think that it was obvious that he wanted this to be his search, that he wanted the potential, you know, glory, if you will, that comes from hiring a successful head coach. And, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that Murphy listened to Gutekunst and those guys. But at the end of the day, I think this was a Murphy hire, and the way he described the process and everything, it was pretty prototypical of what you'd expect from Murphy as a former athletic director and somebody who has gone through hiring searches from a collegiate/educational background. And I thought the way he described what took place was extremely similar to how he would have conducted a search as an athletic director. So, you know, again, I think that Gutekunst likes LaFleur. I think Gutekunst probably believed LaFleur was the best candidate, but to me, this whole thing was orchestrated by Murphy.
Yeah, that whole press conference yesterday, the 45-minute press conference, I learned more about the process, I felt, than actually learning about LaFleur. Did you feel the same way?
Yeah, I thought one of the things Murphy did well was, you know, explain, you know, pretty transparently how the process was conducted. There were some other things during that press conference that he didn't do as well, but I thought the detail that he provided in terms of how things played out and the timeline and the candidates and all that, I thought it was very honest. And, you know, it was, you know, if you went back and looked at the total amount of time that each guy up at the podium spent, you know, talking, Murphy far and away spoke more than anybody else. So I think that he was, you know, sort of in control of that environment yesterday. And yes, I agree with you. I did learn more about the process than I did about LaFleur.
We'll get more into this tomorrow, I think, with everything that's going on to cover today. But one thing that I wanted to ask you, Mike, was when you look at, I guess, the contract and the expectations, 4 years, fifth-year option, it seems like everyone's getting that. So that's standard. That's what NFL coaches are getting here. But when Murphy hands it over to LaFleur and says, "Yeah, we haven't been in the playoffs in 2 years. Let's get back there." With Aaron Rodgers on board, with everybody on board, did anything about yesterday change your mind in terms of how long they're going to give Matt LaFleur to decide if he's going to be a success or not?
Well, I think, you know, if things go poorly, I think he would get 2 years. I think, you know, obviously he's going to get 1 year, and then I don't think there's any chance they would fire him after 1 year unless they went, you know, 2-14 or something completely ridiculous like that, and I don't think there's any reason for that to happen. So, you know, I mean, if they miss the playoffs for 2 straight years, you know, I think that could be enough for them to say, hey, you know, we were wrong, see you later. And then at that point, it's a question of does Murphy lose his job as well. But I think the bottom line is that if they go 2 more years without reaching the playoffs and it's 4 straight seasons without the postseason, you know, at that point, they'd have to look long and hard and say, hey, we gambled a little bit on this 39-year-old guy, even though we all really liked him. And, you know, can we really afford to potentially go a 5th straight season without making the playoffs? And at that point, I would think the answer is no. So in my opinion, he's got 2 years to make tangible progress. And then, you know, if they miss the postseason in the 2nd year, but they go 9-7 and it just happens to be a season when the other wild card teams are better than that, you know, maybe he does get a 3rd year. But I think he's got to make the playoffs one of his first 2 seasons to really validate, you know, this is a viable selection.
Another thing I found really interesting yesterday that, you know, they said none of the other candidates really bowled them over. And what would they have done if they didn't hit on LaFleur? Because, you know, even Murphy said...
Murphy really dragged some guys.
He did.
That was unbelievable.
He did. And then he said, you know, thank God, basically, that LaFleur hit. What would he have done, man? He would have hired a guy he wasn't thrilled about.
Well, this is the interesting part of all of that to me, is I think the Packers really towed the line of realizing that what they were saying yesterday was that they hired the guy that was the best interview. And then they had to kind of catch themselves on the fly and say, well, he was also the best candidate. He was also the best candidate. We didn't hire him just because he interviewed the best. And one of the things to keep in mind is that, you know, by nature, football coaches tend to be guys that are a little gruff, that are a little bit, you know, rough around the edges, because the sport that they oversee and the sport that they coach requires those things. So you can be a poor interviewer in terms of a formal sit-down, explain-yourself kind of setting with, you know, brass of an NFL franchise, and that doesn't by any means make you a bad NFL coach. So I thought that as the interview went on yesterday, it became clear that the bigger reason why they hired LaFleur was that he bowled them over so much in the interview process. And LaFleur deserves a lot of credit for that. If you interview well and handle yourself well and present yourself well, that's obviously very important. But my biggest question coming out of yesterday was, okay, did they end up hiring him because they really thought he was the best candidate, or did they really hire him because he had a tremendous interview during a process when the other interviews were a little bit underwhelming? And that, to me, is going to be a question that will be revisited many, many times if LaFleur does not perform well in Green Bay, because at that point, people will begin to ask questions about the validity of the search itself and not necessarily just LaFleur and whatever he does or doesn't accomplish here in Green Bay.
You know, that's a really good observation. That's a point on that, because I thought, too, when he's saying that LaFleur interviewed really well and it became more of a conversation than an interview, and he's just talking about LaFleur being a family man, I'm like, oh, that sounds great, but X's and O's. Can this guy get it done? And you're right. It was more of like, I felt he got the job based on his interview skills than what he really is as a coach, and that might be unfair to LaFleur too.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, they could absolutely could have thought that LaFleur was the best potential coach of the bunch that they had, and they could also believe that he interviewed the best. Those things are very possible. And just because he interviewed well, maybe he is going to go on and become a really good coach. I just got the vibe that they spent so much time discussing the interview and not a lot of time discussing what they specifically liked about LaFleur, that it felt like he had a fortuitous moment in that he was the last guy in the bottom of the 9th inning and during a coaching search that left the Packers pretty, you know, uninspired or unimpressed. And when, you know, you've been traveling all around the country for interviewing these guys from Boston to Tennessee to Florida back to Tennessee, you know, I think that, you know, there was a chance that they were just so enamored by a guy that was different and more impressive than the rest of the interviews, that it maybe swayed them a little bit. Now, only time will tell if that's true, because if LaFleur goes out and does an amazing job, then obviously they were right. But if LaFleur goes out and struggles, then I think people begin to ask questions about whether or not the interview process itself was valid, because I find it hard to believe that all nine of the guys they interviewed before LaFleur would come across as unimpressive. I know that's what Mark Murphy said, but, come on. Some of these guys have been head coaches before. I'm not really buying that. So does that mean the interview process was flawed? Does that mean they weren't asking the right questions? What does it mean? And if this thing goes south with LaFleur, then I think all of those questions will resurface, at a later point in time.
All right, I'm going to make a political comparison here, and I will get in trouble for it, but I'm still going to do it. Sometimes they say that on a certain TV cable network, it's really just an audience for the president. That's what he watches, and so they want to get their points across to him. Was there any part of you that thinks maybe that's what they were doing to Rodgers yesterday, where they were trying to? Because there's part of Mark Murphy that seems like he knows he did something wrong, and he's trying to convince you not to punish him too hard. How much did the weight of Aaron Rodgers weigh over yesterday's press conference? And is there any part of you that thinks maybe they were trying to convince Rodgers that they had the right guy for him?
I didn't really get that vibe, to be honest with you. And I think probably the reason is because, A, LaFleur and Rodgers have already spoken. B, Gutekunst and Rodgers have already spoken about LaFleur. And I just feel like anything that they needed to convince Rodgers of, they certainly have the opportunity to do that through back channels, not through, anything in the public. And they can have much deeper discussions with Rodgers about schematic things and, X's and O's things and potential assistant coaches, and they can talk about all of those things more deeply, behind closed doors than they can, at a public dais, through a press conference setting. So I didn't really get that vibe. I think there were certainly questions. There were questions posed about, what Rodgers knew and how important he is and all those types of things. But I didn't get the sense that from Green Bay's perspective, they were doing anything to sway Aaron Rodgers one way or another, because I think anything that they needed to do to try and sway him, they would have done that in private, because I just don't think yesterday's setting really offers the type of detailed opportunities that Rodgers would want to discuss when it comes to those things like scheme and coaches and coaching style and play calling and all those types of things. You can't really get into that in a public setting. So I did not really get the vibe that they were trying to sway Aaron Rodgers in any way. I just don't think it's the right setting for that.
I didn't get that either. I just kind of, as we were talking about that, it came up, but I still think Gutekunst is the mastermind in all of this. So I'll stand on that one. And if I'm wrong, I'll take the fall for that. As far as the coaching search around the coaching search, Mike Pettine, that was approached yesterday. He said, I haven't really talked to Mike yet. Do we have any details on Mike Pettine's future? And then anybody else, are we aware of anybody else that may be joining this staff here in the coming days?
Well, there's been numerous reports that Pettine will stick around, even though LaFleur kind of demurred on that yesterday. So it certainly seems like Pettine will be back next year, and that LaFleur maybe just didn't want to announce that before all the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed. As for other members of the staff, I saw a report this morning by my old colleague Bob McGinn that said Joe Philbin had been given permission by the Packers to interview for the offensive line coach of the Vikings.
Yeah, we haven't even touched on that yet today.
Yeah, so it sounds like he could be heading out of town potentially. And then in terms of other candidates that could be coming back, I saw late last night mentioned by another of my former colleagues, Tom Silverstein, that there are a couple of candidates from San Francisco that Matt LaFleur is interested in interviewing if the 49ers will allow him to do so. And obviously one of those would be his brother, who works out there. So it sounds like he wants to go with guys he's familiar with, guys he knows, and guys he can get good recommendations on. Now, that doesn't mean he won't retain anyone here from Mike McCarthy's staff. I still think guys like James Campen and guys like Ben Sermon are names to keep an eye on, but certainly I think he wants to bring in some pieces that he's familiar with, that he has experience with. So I expect the offensive staff to be a little bit of a hodgepodge of any potential holdovers and any new faces, and then the defensive staff I think that really comes down to whether or not he finalizes this with Pettine. And if he does, then I think he's probably going to lean more heavily on Pettine and see what he wants to do in that regard.
Michael, appreciate it. We'll probably bug you and wake you up next week. We thank you for your time, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, guys. See you later.
Michael Cohen joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Find his work at The Athletic, The Athletic, WISC. You can check out all their work on the Wisconsin feed of their Twitter account. He joins us again. Great Midwest Bank, start your renovation journey with a simple and convenient pre-approval from Great Midwest Bank, dedicated to providing perfectly personalized home loans to those right here in our community since 1935.
How about Murphy yesterday praising Joe Philbin before the press conference even gets rolling?
How about Murphy almost crying?
Yeah.
While talking about Joe Philbin.
And then Philbin possibly going to the Vikings now.
They can have him.
What's that?
Let him have him. Good for Joe.
Well, you know what?
To be the O-line coach?
Well, here's the deal. The Packers, with the new coach, different philosophy anyway. So what is Philbin really going to give them anyway?
Right. I'm not. In this case, whatever's good for Joe, I'd be happy for Joe.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, for people who are worried about him going over there and giving out some secrets, what's he going to say?
Right. 414-799-1250. We'll continue to talk about a wild day yesterday. If you are just waking up, the Brewers are going to sign Yasmani Grandal, by the way. Huh? Yeah, we'll have details on that coming up next.
All right, the Q Club of Wisconsin, your place to watch all your favorite sports action. There's so much good basketball right now on TV from our state, and you can get there and watch your favorite games. Of course, the football games this weekend, they'll have all the games on, the volume turned up as well. Get to the Q Club of Wisconsin on Waukesha's north side. The Q Club's got something to please everybody. They got the awesome burgers, the wings, the appetizers, the award-winning fish fries on Friday nights and Wednesday nights as well. The fish fries, your choice of four different styles, piled high with all the extras. You also find the best in live entertainment on weekends. If you like live music, the Q Club's got that. Go to their Facebook page. If you want to check out some live music, Q Club, go to their Facebook. It'll tell all the acts that are coming there for the next several weeks or so. But their indoor sports entertainment room. How about this? The pool tables, the tornado foosball, the shuffleboard, electronic darts, ping pong, and a whole lot more. So you go there, you watch sports, you can play some of their games in their huge entertainment room. Most importantly, with a sports bar, though, you want great food, and the food there is second to none. Delicious and fresh food, as always, at the Q Club of Wisconsin. Where is it located? It's on the north side of Waukesha, the Q Club, 2454 North Grandview Boulevard, just a half mile south of I-94. Waukesha's great north side. The old Highway T, get off of 94, go get off of T, 94 to T, take it about a half mile in, and you'll see the sign, Q Club of Wisconsin. Get in there and enjoy yourself a great evening or an afternoon watching some sports, having some good food, and enjoying the entertainment room as well. The Q Club of Wisconsin. Visit them online, qclubofwi.com, or on Facebook. That's the Q Club of Wisconsin on Waukesha's great north side.
Winkler served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. I'm Bart Winkler. That is Chuck Freeman from the Bryant Stratton College Athletic Studios. 414-799-1250. Talking about a big day at Lambeau Field yesterday. We'll give you details on the Yasmani Grandal signing, as reported by Ken Rosenthal for the Brewers, momentarily, and talk some Bucks at 8:35. Let's go back out to the phones. 799-1250. Let's grab Phil in Waukesha. Phil, what's up, bud?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Hey, Phil.
I listen every morning, first-time caller.
Phil. In your whole life, you've never called the show.
I've never called the show. It
feels like the first time. Oh, Philly. Philly, my friend, don't be a foreigner to the show. Jeez, all right. What do you got for your first time?
So I wanted to comment on the commentary on the interview process. And let me clarify my comments with the fact that I've been a top HR executive for close to 30 years, and I've been involved in literally hundreds of firings at all levels. And what I have found, and what experts will tell you, how technically sound someone is not near as important as how they fit within the culture of the organization. And I think that we have to assume that literally every single person that they interviewed, they all knew their stuff. they were all experts. You know, one may have one preference over another, but they all knew, they all know offensive football. But not all of them are going to fit into how the Packers run things. They're not going to fit in with Brian Gutekunst or Mark Murphy, or, for that matter, Aaron Rodgers. And so I would say that that's one of the reasons why I didn't want Josh McDaniel. There was so much commentary on how it had to be his way or the highway, and that, well, maybe he learned his lesson in Denver, and he's not that way anymore. The best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. I think that's who he is. I think that that works for him in certain places. I don't think that would have worked for him in Green Bay. So I guess my comment is for those that will, why did they move so quick? I'll tell you, when you find the right person and it sticks out like that, and not every search runs that way, but when you find the right person, you know it. You just know it. That's all I can say. So I'm excited about the LaFleur hire. He was my number one pick of those they interviewed. If I would have had my choice, he wasn't interested, but I would have chosen Jim Harbaugh.
Well, Phil, here's my problem with the whole interview process. Here's my whole problem with the interview process, and not only with this, but it seems like with a lot of things. It's like how impressive you are during the interview process as far as how good you interview. A great candidate might be passed over because he doesn't interview well.
I suck at interviews.
I do too.
I can't believe I have this job.
I am terrible. Even when I interviewed for this job, way back in the day, I thought, Jesus, I'm terrible at it. We both have said this. You and I have said this. We both think we make initially bad impressions on people.
Oh God, yes.
So, and that's part of the interview process, because you're getting that one impression. It's like, God, I suck at that. If I could only get by the interview, I'd be fine.
Don't you think that they did their due diligence? And with just because they may have interviewed him once, that's not their whole body of knowledge regarding LaFleur. They know what they're getting into.
Yeah, they've been prepping. Yeah. Murphy's talked about this. And Phil, I'm going to let you go. Thanks for the call. Don't be a foreigner.
But I didn't hear anything out of Murphy or Gutekunst other than the fact that he interviewed well and they liked him and he was a family man as to why he got that job.
They didn't say a lot of that kind of stuff, and that's something they could have done a better job at. But some of the things that Mark Murphy did say was when they fired Mike McCarthy, they did get a jump on the scouting process, and Mark Murphy did end up going through some sort of search committee, and Charlie Casserly, who he roomed with back in the Washington days, was a big part of this, too. One thing that was very interesting, and this is what I talked to Clemens about off the air yesterday, and I'm excited to talk to him around 9:15, is that Murphy said there's video available where you can watch these guys interview for other things. I was floored by that. I think I have that.
Well, the NBA, here. The NBA provides something similar for, like, the draft. I don't know if they do it for the coach, but the NBA draft, they have people in the front office who, if you need a videotape or, help with the draft or information, there are people who do that. There's a guy, I can't think of, he passed away a long time ago, but was a longtime NBA scout who did that for the draft. So it wasn't surprising to me that the NFL does this for coaching hires.
Well, here's what Mark Murphy had to say about that. I didn't know that something like this existed.
And also we're able to watch, and all of the search committee members watched videotape interviews that the NFL provided. And so we watched that for, we watched those for all the candidates we ended up interviewing, and that was really helpful to see the consistency between what we were seeing live and interviews they'd made in the past. And we also used that as a way to vet some of the candidates.
I didn't know they did that. That blew me away.
Yeah, either did I. I guess I'm not surprised by it, but didn't realize that was out there.
It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins. As far as the Yasmani Grandal signing, Frames will have that for you in his update. It's a one-year deal, $18.25 million. We'll have more discussion on that throughout the show. We're going to talk some Bucks next. Gary is going to join us. We'll talk some Bucks next as they not only win last night, but I think they may have had Giannis seal up the MVP. Yes, it's early. Yes, anything can happen. But if I'm an MVP voter, I'm writing his name in an envelope and sending it in yesterday. It's Chuck and Winkler. We'll talk to Gary next. 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Who stood out last night for the Bucks? Let's get the Chili's MVB from last night's Milwaukee Bucks Pick and Save postgame show. Dial 799-1250, and you could win free food from Chili's. Chili's is back, baby. Back! This is Chuck and Winkler on the only station Bucks fans need. Sports Radio, 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Pretty simple how this goes down. You listen to the postgame show that we have after every single Bucks game. We have a postgame show, 90 minutes, 2 hours of nothing but Bucks talk for you. There we go, Bart. You can do it. They name the MVP of that day's game, and then we ask you who it is the next day at 8:35. Mike's in Waukesha. Mike, who was the Chili's MVP for the Bucks?
The Greek Freak, Giannis.
Was it the Greek Freak?
In the Bucks 116-109 win over the Houston Rockets, your Chili's MVP? Giannis, who has his second career 2020 game, scoring 27 points, grabbing a season-high 21 rebounds. Giannis, your Chili's MVP.
That's Ryan Horvath with the update. Thank you, Ryan, and congrats, Mike. You've got free food from Chili's. Giannis last night, a huge night. James Harden, great, but Giannis maybe even better. We'll talk about last night's 116-109 win over the Rockets. Right now with you guys and with our friend Gary Wolfel, who joins us. Wolfelspressbox.com on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Gary, guten Morgen, meine Freunde.
I like that. Hey, before we get started, you guys want to all chip in and buy Shaq's shack in Orlando?
I did not see this. What's going on?
Shaq's house?
He's putting up his Shaq house for sale. And I figured you and I, if the three of us went in together, we might have a chance. I mean, it's only $22 million.
We might be able to buy a blade of grass. That might be it. Maybe a blade of grass.
Where do you go from a $22 million house? I mean, what's the next step?
You know, why would you even want to own a 22? Like, these guys own houses with 15 bedrooms, and you maybe are living there with your wife. Why would you need 15 bedrooms?
Well, this one only has 12, so I guess that's Nick. But
I mean, I guess variety is the spice of life. Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe the bedroom isn't doing it for you. Maybe you gotta just get a new location.
You have one for Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, every day of the week, and then some to spare.
Yeah, I guess that's where I'm going.
Unreal. All right, let's talk about last night's game. I think both MVP candidates, in their own way, had great games last night. James Harden for Houston hit the 42. And, of course, our guy Giannis, 28 and 21. But I think at the end of the day, Giannis led his team to the win, and the Bucks once again put another stamp of approval on being one of the best teams in the NBA.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. They played a Western Conference team, and anytime you beat a Western Conference team, you know, it's definitely a positive. Obviously, Giannis is one of the candidates for the MVP. I'm not going to be a Bart Winkler and phone in my ballot yet. We're not even at the halfway point. But
you can wait a week and do it. I'll give you a week. You know, sometimes it's hard to get to the post office. I get it. That's fine.
Okay. But, I think this year's MVP race is going to be very, very fascinating. I think there's legitimately 5-6 guys that could be in the mix. And you know, you look at Denver, and everybody goes, oh, Denver, nobody cares about Denver, blah, blah, blah. But they're in first place in the Western Conference, which we've talked about before, is by far the best conference. And if they don't have Jokic, they're not in first place. I mean, that guy is having an amazing season. And if you look purely at numbers, you're going to say, well, you shouldn't even be in the conversation. But I definitely disagree.
There's definitely, as we talked to Gary Wolfel, there's definitely other candidates for the MVP that would be deserving if they win the award. If James Harden won it, okay. If Kawhi Leonard wins it, sure. Jokic, that's a good example. I get it. I just think that Giannis is the guy that has had the biggest impact on his team, what this Bucks team might look like, even though their depth is part of the reason I do like them to make a long postseason run. It kind of all centers around Giannis. I mean, he had 21 rebounds last night, and I thought he had 8. I don't know how he does it. He's just phenomenal in that way. My fear with this race is that, like a lot of MVP races, the conversation gets boring. So where it should be, to me, Giannis the entire time, start to finish, like in the NFL, it was clearly Mahomes the entire year, and it should be. But that gets boring to say that week in and week out. So let's do a Breeze thing, or let's do a Rivers thing. Guys that are having phenomenal years, it's just they're not having the years and the impact that Mahomes is. So that's what I worry. So my question, Gary, is if Giannis continues on the pace that he is, will that assure him the MVP in your eyes? Because I don't think, unless he falters, that anybody else can do anything to steal it from him. It's got to be, if he loses the MVP, I want it to be because he lost it and not they just felt like conversating about someone else.
So you're saying you believe, and I respect your opinion, that he's having a much better year than James Harden, or do you think this is a close race?
I think start to finish, Giannis led at the start and should lead to the end. I think that Harden's having a great year, and when the MVP chatter came for Harden, what did he do? He stepped up. He had a great game against the Warriors. I mean, he's making big shots.
Did you see that shot against the Warriors?
Unbelievable. He is so good.
One of the greatest clutch shots I've ever seen in a regular season game.
Yeah, Harden is so good. And the step-back threes yesterday, he shot them back into the game. But when you look at start to finish, I think Giannis has the better body of work. I think Giannis does more things. And look, that's why I thought last night's game was so important, because Giannis went to Houston, put up 27 and 21, was dominant the entire game. Harden sure had 42 and let his team crawl back in. But in those final 2 minutes, Giannis put the Rockets away, and Harden missed three big shots to tie or come within one. So I think if you're going to look at the MVP race, you take those 2 minutes come May, and that's where you make your decision.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be really tough. Now, in defense of, and we could talk for hours on this, but did you see who his supporting cast was last night? Now raise your hand.
Yeah, your boy Brandon Knight was back.
Yeah, no, we said the Bucks still got a better supporting cast. There's no doubt about that.
It's not even close.
No, I know.
Okay, raise your hand if you can tell me where Daniel House went to college.
Who?
Yeah.
I couldn't. I couldn't hear.
Daniel House. I could tell you he was in Warriors camp. I could tell you that.
I mean, this guy started last night. You know, Austin Rivers. God bless him. He's a nice player, but is he an NBA starter? Probably not.
Yeah.
And you look at Gerald Green. On most teams, he'd probably be the eighth or ninth man. Who am I missing here? Oh, Tucker. Solid player. Nothing special.
Brandon Knight had 7 minutes.
I mean, guys, James Harden was basically playing 1-on-5.
Yeah.
Really. You know, who else does he have? With Chris Paul out and with Eric Gordon out.
I'll give him Capella, although I'm looking at the box score, 4 of 16 last night. 13 boards. I'll give him Capella without Paul. Capella's very good. But, yeah, the team around Harden's a lot worse, and that's maybe where some of the people will try to lean towards giving Harden the MVP. But if you give Harden the MVP, you're just finding excuses not to give it to Giannis, who it should be.
I think they're both legit. And I'll tell you two other guys that I would throw into the mix. I mean, again, we could go on for hours about this. Kawhi Leonard, I mean, there isn't any doubt in my mind he is the best all-around player in the game. And we saw that when they played the Bucks, you know, just recently.
Yeah.
That guy is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then you talk about Embiid. Embiid's numbers are every bit as good as Giannis's. And they have two fewer wins. So what if Philadelphia ends up winning the East and the Bucks finish like third or fourth? Then what do you do?
Yeah. No, I hear. I think the MVP is yet to be determined, although I think right now it should be Giannis. I don't like watching James Harden. There's probably a superstar I like watching least. Don't like watching least than James Harden, because it's four guys watching one guy operate, and that's not an MVP.
Did you see in the last 3-4 minutes though? Every time he threw the ball to somebody, they threw it back to him.
Oh yeah, yeah. And Brogdon, God bless him, man. He's working his ass trying to guard him. And then one time he got switched up. Middleton was on him, and I like Middleton's length better on Harden, so I was actually good with that. But
Hey, Chuck, speaking of Brogdon, today's trivia question. When is the last time he missed a free throw?
Oh, I don't even know. When would that be?
I'm going to say, I don't know. Yeah, I don't have a guess.
In the middle of November.
Really? Okay.
He's missed one free throw this year. He's 77 out of 78.
Yeah.
He's playing about as well as anybody in this association right now.
Yeah, I mean, just solid. Great. Just a solid guy. Not a superstar, but just a solid guy. Just a solid player.
All right, I'll concede. Well, if Giannis doesn't get the MVP, it should be the president.
Donald Trump?
No! Malcolm Brogdon!
Okay. Well, no, it's going to be fun. I mean, they played 40 games. 42 to go, so it's going to be very, very fascinating to see how this unfolds down the stretch.
You know, one thing, Giannis, I mean, his tip-ins and his work around the basket, his pass that he made, I forgot who the backdoor pass was to last night. He was on the block, and he made a post pass for a guy cutting for the baseline, and it was terrific. Final 2 minutes of the game, and it was a big, big basket. Giannis doing those things. See, I don't see that out of James Harden.
No, I agree. I mean, his forte is the scoring, and there's probably nobody better in the league at scoring than James Harden. By the way, did you see D'Antoni's comment between the third and fourth quarter? You know, when the Rockets were down, what was it, 9 at the break whatever it was? And they interviewed him, and he was asked about coming back, and he goes, we have James Harden. We have a chance.
Yeah.
I mean, just real smugly, you know what I mean?
Yeah, one thing Harden does, and I like D'Antoni, but one thing Harden does that...
You do or don't?
What's that? Oh, I do. I like D'Antoni. I've enjoyed always dealing with him, no matter what team he's been on or coaching. Absolutely. One thing that Harden does that Giannis still has not done, I mean, you know, Harden makes free throws. Giannis split his free throws last night down the stretch. But I want to see, I mean, that's something that Giannis has got to get by. Because if he's going to take the ball to the rack, which he does, he's going to get a lot of free throw shots, and he's got to be able to make those on a high percentage.
Yeah, well, not only that, I was watching post-game show with Paul Pierce, and Pierce brought up what I've been saying now for the last 2 years. He's got to develop a mid-range shot, you know, 15 to 18 feet. I mean, if he can just do that, I mean, he's going to take his game to another level. So we shall see.
Gary, appreciate it. I believe you're on the big show. 448 is what the promo keeps telling me. We'll tune in for that, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks, Gary.
And I'll have my ballot ready to go for you, Bart.
Thank you, Gary. I don't ask for much.
No, you don't. Have a good one, Jeff.
Gary Wolfel joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Start your renovation journey with a simple and convenient pre-approval from Great Midwest Bank, dedicating to providing perfectly personalized home loans to those right in the air. You finish it. I quit.
Huh?
I stop knowing how to read. Dedicated to providing perfectly personalized home loans to those right here in our community since 1935. Hey, we'll take a quick break, come back, and talk about the worst complaint that people had about the Packers press conference yesterday. And you guys can chime in as well. It's 799-1250. Chuck and Winkler on the Fan.
When I tell you I was speechless, I was speechless because there's just so much tradition here, and I can't think of a greater place to be a head coach in this league. And really, in all of sports, this is a dream come true for me.
Sounds a little different than...
I'm a highly successful NFL head coach.
Oh, you didn't get hired in this cycle, Mac. The voice you heard first was Matt LaFleur. That's the new head coach of the Green Bay Packers, introduced yesterday. And following along, watching the coverage on TV, listening to it on the radio, the biggest complaint I saw right away, outside of Murphy rambling, was that Matt LaFleur was nervous. And I thought that was pretty unfair to attack a guy for being nervous for the situation he was in. I mean, he is the 15th head coach of the Green Bay Packers, a position held by, as he said, Vince Lombardi and Mike Holmgren, and even giving some props to Mike McCarthy. It's rare to be a coach in the NFL. It's even rarer to be a coach of a franchise that's been around for 100 years and won 13 titles. And from a guy who went from pretty much obscurity to the head coach with his entire family around him, yeah, man, I'd be nervous too.
Yeah, you can't hold that against them. Just like if a guy interviews poorly, you can't hold that against him. at the end of the day, you know, he's got to be able to make decisions in tight situations. He's got bigger, he's going to feel more pressure as he goes on and he's coaching these games during the season. And Murphy put some added pressure on him, basically told him, don't screw it up. We've lost the last 2 years. We need to get back to winning. And I was like, Jesus, Murphy expect them to get them back to the playoffs next year? When he made that comment, I don't know. I didn't like what Murphy said. When he said that, he goes, he basically put it on the onus on LaFleur. We need to get back to winning.
Well, we'll hear from Murphy a little more coming up just after 9 o'clock. Another keyword for $1,000, and then Mike Clemens at 9:15. But going off the nervousness, that is your question today to win Jimmy Buffett tickets. We've got Jimmy Buffett tickets. He is coming to Alpine Valley in July, the 20th of July. So we are asking you guys on Twitter at 105.7FM, the fan, with the hashtag CWTickets. What's the most nervous you've ever been in your entire life? We got a lot of good responses. Zach says giving a speech to 500 friends for being the honorary master's graduate for the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare. E-Rock says the day my wife went into labor with our first child. Andrew says it's a sports one, the state Senate vote on if the Brewers were going to stay or not. Come on, man, says Packers in Super Bowl 21. Frames, what's the most nervous you've ever been in your whole life?
That was one of them right there, with the Senate vote, when that happened. And I stayed up all night to listen to that. And I was doing sports talk down the dial. And that was, yeah, because I was very nerve-wracking because my favorite team, the Brewers, might be moving to Charlotte. But I'll say, personally, probably coaching in the state championship game back in 1993, that was probably the most nervous I had been, because we've gotten to the state championship game and you only get one shot at it. And, you know, you like to hope that, you're able to get the job done. And I was very nervous that whole morning and that whole previous night after we won the semifinals. Yeah, without a doubt.
Mine would be the first time I ever did a live shot on TV as a reporter. Before this, I was a reporter in lacrosse in the news. And if you watch the news, you see guys in the studio all the time, but sometimes reporters are out live on scene. And the first time I was ever live on scene was at a car dealership because there was a big hailstorm. So every time there's a hailstorm, it dents the hell out of these cars. So I had to go to the dealership and show people the hail. And I had a 60-second hit. And in that 60 seconds, I was so nervous, I said the phrase hail balls. We counted it. It was 12 times. I said, hey, guys, a lot of hail balls falling here. The hail balls are this big. Look, there's a hail balls over here, and there's hail balls over there. Here, a hail ball. There, a hail ball. Everywhere, a hail ball. And then they zoomed in on my hand because I had some hail balls in my hand, and my hand was just shaking all over the place like I was in the electric chair.
So what did they say to you when you got back to the studio?
I didn't get a lot of eye contact.
Your boss, did he say anything to you?
It was actually a woman.
Okay.
Frames, to be progressive.
Oh, God. Okay. Here we go.
No. They didn't teach me or nothing about it. It just kind of fire by trial there, or trial by fire, and I got better at it over time.
I was nervous the first time I did TV in Duluth because I was doing the 10 o'clock sports, and, you know, you're relying on the camera. You're relying on the teleprompter.
Yeah.
The people in back to roll the tapes to make sure that everything, the B-roll, is all ready to go. The first time, when you're on live TV, it's a lot different than being on live radio for some reason.
It is. You know what's weird is when we're on radio, this is fine. Everyone's listening great.
Yeah.
But if somebody walks by our door window and peeks in, I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah, the TV.
Speaking
in front of a crowd is also one of those deals. It's like speaking in the radio is one thing, but getting up in front of a crowd, there's always a little anxiety when that comes into play.
So tell us when you were the most nervous. You can chime in. That's our Twitter poll today. You can win Jimmy Buffett tickets. Tweet us at 105.7FM, the fan, with the hashtag CWTickets. We are asking you guys your thoughts on that press conference. Does Mark Murphy have too much power? Or do you feel like Gutekunst might be working behind the scenes? And we can mention Matt LaFleur. It was his day. That next.